one of the high-end dignitaries, yeah. Mr. Front Office, Mr. Derek Brooks. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. What about yourself?
I'm good, man. You got a lot of titles, man.
Too many.
You got a lot of titles, don't you?
Yes, too many.
You know, how many hours you done? How many hours you sleep a night?
I only need about five.
Okay. We're about the same.
Yeah, about five, yeah. Six. I think once I start getting past that, you know, I'm up already.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
your brain is going.
Right, and we're so used to catching those power naps.
Yeah, right.
You know, those 5-10 minute.
Yeah, I can still do that.
Yeah.
10 minutes in the middle of the day.
I still do.
Yeah.
So, and that gets me by. Just give me a 5-minute quick power nap, and it's like an hour of sleep for me.
Yeah, man.
But the brain's always working. Like, what's next?
Yeah.
I think that's my problem. To a degree, is I'm always on to what's next, and sometimes I don't appreciate the moment of now.
So my problem is, and I don't know, we're probably similar in a lot of ways. I'm always creating stuff, and I want to stop. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want to sit and focus on something, and as I'm creating one company here, I'm creating something over here, and I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning just thinking about stuff. And
but here's the thing about it: it's like what you're creating. It's so different from what you're doing. You can't bring them together.
Okay.
It took me a while to do that, honestly, with my foundation in my chair.
Mm-hmm.
And it really came through, obviously, the birth of our school. Brooks Sabalo came from the work that we was doing at Derek Brooks Charities. But I've always had the educational component of what I wanted to do in the community. And the school came about for me to bring that separation, but that only lasted probably a year.
Okay,
because now it's like I'm creating programs at Derek Brooks Charities that I want to be courses at our school.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you, and sometimes I'm like, man, why do I care so much?
Well, I mean, that's why you're here. Because you care so much. No, really, think about that. And you have a different mentality than a lot of people, or most. I'm going to say most, okay? Because I think I have a different mentality, and yours is over and above my mentality. And I'm going to say that because, like, I saw you come into the locker room as a young whippersnapper.
Yes.
I was already in the locker room, and I've told you this story before. when Derek Brooks walked in the locker room, I was like, please don't tell me that's Derek Brooks. Because, you know, we had Charles McRae and Keith McCants before that. And I'm like, that's Derek Brooks. I mean, and I watched him play in college. You were fantastic. But when you walked in, I go, where's the rest of it? And then, but then the first practice came out, and he's playing his Will linebacker backside. And I come through, and I rip through like I normally do to get that Will linebacker. And he was gone. I didn't know where he went. And I said, I understand. You can't touch him. You can't touch him. But you came in the league with that mentality of being great. And I think I did too, but not to your level. Where was that created? When did you think you're going to be a Hall of Fame football player?
Well, you know, the Hall of Fame to me, that came much later. But the origin of being great, honestly, started back in Pensacola. You know, and I have my good friend Reggie Johnson here now, and he can attest to this. When I came up behind those guys, it was the following the era of the Emmitt Smiths of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Emmitt, you know, Smith and Kerry Watkins and Reggie and all these guys, they came through Pensacola and really put us on the map in terms of football scholarships.
Okay.
And as they were in high school and I'm in middle school, I'm seeing all these guys and this success. And you saw the hotbed of collegiate coaches coming through Pensacola.
Sure.
And I was blessed to have that in front of me, and Roy Jones Jr. Went to the same high school as I did.
Wow.
So you had a lot of amateur success right there in Northwest Florida. So dreaming about being great and wanting to do it, that came easy because I had those examples. The other component that I think I brought to the table is I loved academics. I love fighting the stereotype of the dumb jock.
Made you different, though, bro.
Yeah.
That made you different.
That served me in a different way, that it kept sports in the right alignment for me because I had all these sports examples to go behind and be great. But I wanted to do it from the standpoint of I want to be the smartest African-American in the class where I am the minority. And I share this story right quick. I end up being one of my favorite teachers, favorite people of the world. But the first day in high school, my English class – I'm, you know, big high school. I have no idea where I'm going. I'm, you know, I walk in as the bell ringing. Well, in her class, you're late. Okay. So I go in, I apologize for being late, and I look around and, you know, I see the similar people that's in the same honors classes, and I'm the only African-American and male and athlete in her class.
Okay.
So I proceed to go take my seat, and there's a desk that's sitting right in front of her that's empty. That, you know, so I sit down at the desk. She said, no, you're going to sit down. You're going to sit in front of me. I said, okay, no problem. So she started rearranging our seats alphabetical order. You know, Brooks is first. So she skips over my name and she just goes down the list. So as we're leaving, getting ready to go to my next class, I stopped. I said, do you mind if I stay in that seat? She said, well, you're only in that seat because you were late. You'll move to your regular seat tomorrow. I said, no, I want to stay in front of you. She said, why do you want to do that? I said, because I'm going to make all A's in this class, and I don't want you to think I'm cheating. I said, if anything,
nice.
I said, if anything, Miss Barbera, they're going to be cheating off me. And she looked. I said, trust me, I've been to school with this same class for the last 4 years in middle school, and they're upset because I'm sitting in front of you.
Really?
You see, I said, she looked at me.
I said,
she
we had
said,
a lot.
Are you serious, young man? I said, I'm very serious.
Yeah.
I said, I never moved.
Yeah.
And till today, she tells that story because the rest of the class, and they were upset because they couldn't cheat off my paper.
You see, now I say we have a lot in common. Not that. I'm like, my teacher wanted me in the back, and there wasn't. You weren't cheating off of me.
No, but that,
anytime soon.
But that,
that's what I got.
So you imagine?
Yeah.
I'm driven with that component, and then you add sports on to it, which obviously came a lot greater. And I didn't understand the pressures that I was under. You know, being the top high school recruit in the country. You know, I went to the closest school to Pensacola, Florida, was Florida State. It wasn't no magic decision.
Is that why you? That's why you went.
Yeah, I just got tired of everybody calling the house, and I said, my mom's. You know, she's like, hey, you need to tell these people where you want to go to school.
Yeah.
So, I said, Mom, let's see what's the closest school to Pensacola. I said, I think it's Florida State. She said, that's what you want to do? I said, yeah, because if something go wrong, I think you guys get to me pretty quick.
Well, okay, I like that. I mean,
so that was my college decision.
Wow. And usually it's the parent that does that normally.
No, I'm telling you, it wasn't the aura of Coach Bowden. I love Coach Andrews to death. It wasn't the football. It was Pensacola just happened to be 30 minutes closer to Pensacola than Auburn.
See, Florida State fans wanted to hear a better story than that.
That's what
they wanted to hear. Like, I grew up in the crib with that garnet.
Listen, I had friends down there. Yo, Reggie went there, Rob, Earl, the McCorvies. Hey, all those guys, they had no bearing on my decision. It was strictly distance.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So I tell that to my son, who's obviously well in, you know, his life experiences.
Did
at
you go to Illinois? Where'd he go?
Oh, he's going to Florida State.
He's going
for different reasons.
Okay.
See, my life experience is I barely left Pensacola. Okay. His life experience is obviously very different.
Way different. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So his reasons for going to Florida State are very different from mine. Well, mine was strictly by distance. His, as he can care less about how close or
but
far
he's
going
to go on to Florida State with some baggage.
No.
Good baggage. But that name, bro, you know that's not easy. You know that's not easy,
it's
right?
It's not, but I'm so
proud. He can handle it?
I'm so proud of the Kalen, and you've seen him, you know, with our kids playing in TBYFL. That has no effect on him.
I think that's beautiful.
He walks around in his own footsteps, man. He accepts the fact, hey, you know, I love my dad. I'm proud of my dad, but I'm so into who I am, that doesn't even faze me.
I think that,
and, you know, that's
a testament to what you did bringing up that young man, because that's a tough deal. It's tough, you know?
It is, and I think his mom, obviously, Carol, had a lot to do with it, too. But that's the part I'm just proud of, just seeing him set his goals and do after. But that, you know, going back to your original question, that's what set the stone for me in Pensacola. And I never really thought about the pressures of that until I got to Florida State when, you know, I had to switch positions. They tried me at safety, and that just didn't work out because I always played linebacker.
Sure.
And that was the first ounce of failure that I had, because it wasn't failure, just I wasn't sure.
Sure, yeah.
So I couldn't be what I wanted to be. So coming here with the Bucks, which I never even talked to the Bucks prior to drafting me. This is how much I knew about the Bucks. I thought Jerry Angelo was the general manager. Because that's who
and
all.
Rich McKay was the general manager.
Yes, but that's who all I saw at the Senior Bowl and the Combine.
Yeah.
I thought it was him.
Yeah, but Rich McKay doesn't go see
everybody. But I never talked to him. Yeah. I never talked to him. So.
Imagine. Well, you were a first rounder. Imagine a guy who was a fifth rounder. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anybody, and I didn't know where I was going to go. Did you know you were going to be a first rounder? Did you know?
No, I saw.
You didn't know.
I'm told when I worked out at the. I never talked to Sam Weiss or anybody from the Bucks in the pre-draft. You know, I did the 15-minute interviews, and you know that was with Maxi Bond.
Maxi Bond. That's
that was.
That's
it was just him. It wasn't anyone else. Yeah. So I said, okay, Tampa. Okay, they drive me. I mean, they suck anyway. So,
yeah.
You know,
let me ask,
I got the call from Sam, and he's like, you know, I see, you know, what's going on the TV about Tampa's, you know, thing about making a move, and they said they're hearing it. It's me. And I'm looking around. I was like, I never talked to Tampa. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
Then I'm thinking, they got veteran linebackers already. They play a different defense.
Mm-hmm.
They play a 4-2-5, some crazy defense. So Sam calls me. And he's like, "Hey, we're gonna take you here in about 2 to 3 minutes. We're gonna announce you're gonna stay in the state of Florida." I said, "That's absolutely great. I get a chance to stay here. My family get a chance to see me play." I said, "But coach, by the way, you guys you only play with two linebackers." He said, "Now we're gonna play with a third one."
Beautiful.
Nice.
And we watched the whole metamorphosis of this. Organization, and it was defensive base. We all know that, okay? And everybody always talk about Monty Kiffin and his defense that has to have a strong three technique, a strong will linebacker, and a strong safety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was that because that's the way that the system was, but who was there at the time? You ever think about that?
Yeah, I do. And this one, Coach Dungy, you know, when he got here, one of the first things that you know, he brought myself and Warren in, and he pulled out, you know, the 16-millimeter tape of Joe Green and Jack Ham.
That's amazing.
And he said, "Guys, these are the standards that I want you guys to measure yourselves against." And we're looking at each other man. You know, Warren's like, I get a chance to play every down. I'm happy. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, I think Harden need to be sitting here versus me. He be talking to Harden Nickerson. Yeah, I say, "Well, what about Hardy?" He said, "Hardy, that's Jack Lambert. But this is what you guys need to be." So he starts showing us plays, and then he shows us Eddie McDaniel and John Randall in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Now, you guys are way more talented than them as a group. As the two guys young." Mm-hmm. He said, and at the time, you know, John Randall was the standard.
Oh, no, I understand. So, I understand.
Literally.
I'm going to say this. I don't know if anybody in the history of the NFL played John Randall more than me. I played against him 16 times.
Good.
16. The other day, me and Sapper going back with Texan, he was like, "You've never blocked Randall." I was like, "You think they're going to let me try 16 times? You think they're going to let me try 16 times? I would put my film against
him." I'm surprised you didn't go back to him with Randall McDaniel.
Well,
he's the only guy that handled my guy.
Well, they were on the same team.
No, Randall. Yeah, but I'm saying, I'm surprised you didn't go back and say Sam.
No, and I'm not comparing myself to Randall McDaniel because
but you
he's
gotta
a freak.
Do it just because it's Sapp. You gotta come back.
Of course, please. I'm not gonna let Sapp walk all over me, man. Listen, Sapp's gonna try to walk over you early.
Yeah.
And you gotta squash that early. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I know it's so funny. I saw you young kids come in the locker
room,
and everybody like when I see Allstott, I'm busting the balls. I'm doing this. Everybody's like, "That's funny you talk to Mike Allstott like that." I'm like, "Mike Allstott probably carried my shoulder pads back in the day. What am I going to jog Mike Allstott for?" But I tell you what, you young bucks, when you guys came in, you guys changed the feel. And I think you would agree with me that Tony Dungy was a catalyst of the whole thing. And I got to play for Tony 1 year, and I had to go elsewhere. And it saddens me because, you know, I saw the way he was and – we've all learned how to be men, literally. Like, you have to bring up his name and how to be accountable as a man. He did a lot of teaching, and I could tell that's the first time I ever saw the way it was really supposed to be.
Yeah, and you saw the run we got on at the end of 96.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won 5 out of the last 6. We sent the Redskins home.
Yep.
I never forget that. They were out there mocking us about you guys are playing hard and we're going to be on TV in 2 weeks. And end of the game, Brian Mitchell. you can sit next to me. We just knocked y'all out the playoffs.
Out.
So you can start to see all of that, but, you know, all that going back to Coach Dungy, he set that up for us, you know, defensively and showing us what we can be when we come together.
Sure.
And he said, hey, we don't have all the parts here, but we got you two. Mm-hmm. And he said, John is going to develop as we go along. John's going to come along and be the third piece. And that's actually what happened. Now, he had a great staff of putting that together. And, again, this is
maybe the best staff ever.
Yeah,
possibly.
This is the magic of Coach Dungy. He goes, he only has one NFL experienced experienced defensive coach his first year. And that was Monty Kiff.
But great teachers.
Yeah. So
great
teachers. He got Kiff at the D.C. Hearn was a scout, and he got the coach.
I didn't know that. Hearn
was at Kansas City with him.
Rob Marinelli is the best assistant coach I've ever seen.
But came from college. Never coached a pro guy. Then he had Levy.
Yeah.
Never coached a pro guy, but great teacher. So his first staff, he's only got one coach with actual on-field.
That's crazy.
Coach, that's Kip. And that's the other pro guy was Hearn. But Hearn was used to dealing with players and managing personalities. Ooh. So that was his first defensive staff, but they just taught.
They're unbelievable.
They taught. And that's where, you know, this the other side of Coach Dungy that, you know, only we players can talk about. He held us to a higher accountability standard.
Way higher.
Than he did what you guys on offense.
Of course he did. Of course.
And that, to me, ended up being, as we got better, it ended up being our crutch and downfall under him.
Agreed.
Because we took way too many leaps and bounds ahead of our offense for them not to be a little bit closer in that development.
Well, I mean, you guys always said, get us 17 points and we're going to win the game, which was usually true. Those few defenses you put on the field for 10 years straight. Listen, you talk about 1 year, 85 Bears. You talk about 1 year, the Ravens. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a period of time, this defense is the best defense I've seen for a 10 to 12 year period of time ever. And I'm a little biased, but I've watched the whole thing.
No,
there was a point where when I see young quarterbacks come into Raymond James Stadium and light up the defense, right in my head I go, does anybody remember when you would put a young quarterback against the old defense? Would anybody remember that? Dismantling. Yeah. You guys would kill a young cat like that.
Yes.
Things have changed, man.
I know. And slowly they're getting back to it. You know, fast forward until, you know, the young men that's out there.
You know,
today.
They're miles from what you guys were.
They're
miles.
But here's the biggest off-season transaction thus far for this organization has been keeping Mike Schmidt.
I agree with that.
Now, end of the season, I was shocked. I heard Coach Smith getting one of these seven jobs and moving on. And then saying, okay, here we go again. We got to start again. But keeping this staff, I guess the first time that the staff has been together for the third year in a row here. Mm-hmm. They get a chance to learn and grow, make changes together as they go into the offseason with a team.
So you know how blessed you were, and you created a lot of it, you guys did, to have played in the same system for that many years. And I don't think people realize this. Like, say when I went from, like, I had one coordinator my rookie year, another one my second, another one my third. Okay, so my first 3 years, I had to learn three different systems. So before something becomes second nature, you got to do it for a little while.
Yeah.
It got to a point where, I know you were revamping the position by yourself.
Yes.
That's amazing, though. And people are still playing Tampa 2.
Right.
You know? That's crazy.
That's the argument. I you know what? I go back and forth with Ray Lewis about that. You know, about defenses being the great. And I always throw the 10-year stat out there with him.
Got to.
I say, I've yet to see them have a Ravens anything.
Yeah, I never hear it.
I know Ravens 3, no Ravens 1, no Ravens.
Let's not dog them out now.
I'm dogging them out because it's just you and me.
I get it.
But but we go back and forth when I say, you know, about us, you know, being, hey, we were so great they got a defense name out to us. You guys, when you guys do that over a period of time, that's when you come in our neighborhood. Now, for a season, obviously, you guys are, man, you're top notch. You know, you can prep for a season. Most people will probably take you guys over us because of how you dominate.
Statistically, they're amazing.
I say you guys did great. I say, but you put any one of those years up there, and we got a comparable argument. I say I believe the way that we won the Super Bowl is probably why we don't get the respect that we do. It's because we We dominated the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And we did what we were supposed to do.
Yeah, and these young kids that are playing now, and they're playing hard, I get it. But when I'm hearing, you know, McCoy getting, you know, compared to Warren Sapp, I don't like it. And when I'm seeing Levante David being compared to Derrick Brooks, I don't like it. And that's not dogging out them as football players. But to be compared to Derrick Brooks, I got to see the ball hit you in the chest a good six times a year in the chest. Like, that's not my – people – you usually get an interception by reaching out your hand and doing stuff. When the ball hits you in the chest, you just want a chess match. You know that, right? You know where the quarterback was going before he even threw it. Yeah. That's film. You know that.
Yeah, that's
– it's film. You know
that,
it's film,
that's
right?
my skill set. But yeah. But I appreciate – just talking about Levante, I appreciate his blitz skills.
Mm-hmm.
I never got a chance to blitz in my sack toes. I was like, I would have loved – to show that part of my game.
It would have wasted you, though. It would have wasted your skills.
But yeah. To your point, that's not what this defense calls
Correct.
For. This defense calls for me to play in space.
Mm-hmm.
So by me being able to play in space and cover a lot of ground, that allowed us to allow someone else to develop a skill set of blitzing
mm-hmm.
from that, and that ended up being
Rondae
Barber.
And being Rondae, yeah.
So that's where I think the magic of what you said, us being around each other for mm-hmm. a lot of years, we were able to do that and then enhance each other mm-hmm. and complement each other. When we got Simeon here, now Warren truly had a chance to see, hey, I got to respect a whole nother side rush mm-hmm. because he's just as dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And Simeon, when he got here, had to learn how to rush with the group and not on his own that mm-hmm. he did in Arizona.
Yeah.
I just go out and do my own thing. Now, no, we got a more efficient way to do it that even make you more dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by having a group together to do it, and honestly, Ian, I think this is the first year by having Coach Smith come back again and his staff intact, they get a chance to assess the skill set of these
mm-hmm.
young players on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what they do best. That's how the whole change came
sure.
out of the Atlanta game.
Sure.
And I called him out. I come on. I was like, you know, John Lynch get his jersey retired and that effort? Are you
mm-hmm.
kidding me?
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy catch a check down. Levante Freeman, he's fast.
Yeah,
but you kid, third and 18.
Yeah.
And he gets 25 yards sideline to sideline.
A lot of it's tough. A lot of.
Oh, that was a tough game to swallow.
A lot of it's tough. Now, you know, FSU, you're FSU through and through. Young man who's our quarterback now, Jameis Winston,
mm-hmm.
Who has been a model citizen to this point. We know what he's, you know, the tribulations he went through in college, and mm-hmm. it'll never go away. I said that earlier. The young man is at a school this last week
yes.
Speaking to young men and women. We all heard what he said. Men have to be strong and women more quiet. And listen, maybe a word or two of the message came through the wrong way, okay?
Yes.
But my thing is, listening to the way people react on a 23-year-old man
mm-hmm.
taking his time to enlighten kids, and I said this, who got hurt? If the grown-ups didn't make such a big deal out of it, the kids
yes.
wouldn't even have realized what happened. So what is your assessment on what happened with Jameis, and have you got a chance to talk to him since?
Yes, we was actually you know, scheduled to meet that night, as we usually do throughout our weekly, bi-weekly meetings. And
you meet with him twice a week?
Yeah, at least once or once
every
week.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
We
talk about everything.
Yeah,
I love it.
Just be up for him as a resource. So as soon as he left the school, text me, hey, want to tell you about this incident. And I it got blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, man, I looking back on it, you know, I may could have expressed it differently.
Yes,
but
yes.
I just feel like they took what I said, something innocent, because I'm trying to get a couple young men who
Correct.
Wasn't paying attention. I was
mm-hmm.
just trying to get them excited about the message.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He said, that's all I was trying to do, was get them excited. And now I sit back, it's like, I said, well, let's talk about it. So he told me about it. And I said, now, where you are, and it's just going to be, you got to understand, in every situation, your guards are always up.
Always.
I say, and that's the...
They're looking for you, too.
Yeah, that's the fishbowl that
mm-hmm.
we live in.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you always got to think that way. He's in, and this is this kid. But that doesn't allow me to be genuine. I want to be genuine.
You can't.
I
you can't really be genuine. You can't.
But that's him wanting to.
No, I get it.
Look, I'm not. Mm-hmm. That's it. I'm not here to fake it.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to get the real me, and I'm genuine when I'm talking to kids.
Yeah.
So you being genuine first, does not let this incident stop what you're doing. You're going to get back out, get back on the horse, and going to continue to be a positive message in supporting our educators. Supporting the going. That's not, this is a learning experience. So now,
sure.
Let's look at the bright side of it. Now you become a better speaker in an educational environment.
Correct.
I say, secondly, maybe instead of trying to make 3 points, you make one. I say, if you got three third grader to fifth graders, you're only going to have the attention, trust me, 7 to 8 minutes.
Tops.
You know, let's get your message there, and then you make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
I say, or bring another player with you.
Okay.
Turn it into a question and answer. I say, it's different techniques. Turn it into a Q&A with the kids who engage. And the young man that wasn't, you felt getting the message, or boy, hey, ask him a question. Go stand behind him, talk. Now you just find different ways to get your message through, but you don't go into you know, a turtle's shell and not do it. And that's what he's not going to do. But I do feel, and I'm not going to say that, hey, it's getting blown out of proportion. Yeah, I think certain.
A little bit.
I think certain people.
Yeah.
Made more of this than what it should, but again, they have that right.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I'm more concerned about not the criticism. I'm more concerned of how he fast forward this in his life and make it better for him, which I know he'll do.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's going to change him, and I'm happy about that.
No.
Because the reason why Jameis Winston as a rookie could stand in front of 50-something alpha males and then be following him is because none of it is fake.
Right.
And you know that. When you're, you don't have to say one word in a locker room to be a leader. That word leadership to me is the most overblown word ever. The one who's standing up in front of the team a lot of times, that's not the leader.
No.
That's just the voice.
Mm-hmm.
We had, Paul Gruber was a leader. Did you ever hear Paul Gruber put four words together? I never did.
Yeah, help me with my pass.
Yeah, help me with my. But other than that, like Paul Gruber, he wouldn't say a word. Even if I asked him a question, he wouldn't even answer me half the time. But as a rookie, I'm saying, what are you studying? Well, this is how much studying I do. And I'm like, who needs to study that much? As a rookie, who studies that much? You know, at the end of my career, you know what the rookies were saying? How much do you need to study? Because, and I'm thinking, now I'm Paul Gruber.
Right.
That's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Not a blah, 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 flap your gums. To me, that's not leadership.
No, leader, and that was one of his projects in that he and I kind of went through was, hey, Jameis, let's you in your own words, in your time and space, let's define leader versus leadership. That was very different. That was one of the things that now, as you start to understand those concepts, that's going to help you with both, with the space you're in with this team.
Mm.
So then you'll start to understand, as your point, okay, when is one of them because a voice, when the other requires action, when does one requires leaning to a teammate to handle a role?
Sure.
You know, decipher. When is another one that you don't say anything? You know, so that's where his maturation and his growth has started to become is understanding each. Because you can't, right now, this team, hey, you got to be so focused on going in your third year and be as earning the right to be the starting quarterback for the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Because teams got 2 years of tape on you.
It doesn't get easier.
And it doesn't. It's not going to get
any. No,
it's not going to get any easier. So
how
are you going to be the best at your position that allows these other things to make you better as a person? And the other thing I told him about the other day, I said, hey, another light to look on this in a situation is this happened at a time where it's the offseason.
It's perfect.
Imagine if this happens during the season and now you got to carry this story for a week or two into a game plan or a situation. Now it becomes a distraction. So you got time to assess it, learn it, get better from it. And again, you've done all you can do now. Now it's all about fast forward.
I think he's strong enough to overcome this, and hopefully he's put it behind him already. Mm-hmm. Now,
you never had a surgery?
I've never had a surgery.
You are a freak. You are a freak. No, seriously. And, you know, this guy here, we're in the locker room, in the training room, and Paul Gruber was had some record of consecutive starts, okay? This kid's in, like, his first year. Listen to this. This is how cocky this guy is. So in his first
year. I was messing with Mayberry at first.
I don't think so.
I was.
I don't think so.
I was.
So I'm like, hey, Paul's going to get the record this game for this many straight games. He goes, I'll beat that. And you know what? He beat it. He beat it. Who doesn't get hurt? Who doesn't have surgery?
I started bothering Tony Mayberry about it. I was actually joking with Mayberry. He's like, so you just going to say? I say,
yep. But you did, though. But you said it was confidence. You weren't joking. I know when someone's joking. You weren't joking. And then when you get it, that's not a joke.
I was joking because it was, obviously Paul and your boy Tony Mayberry, offensive lineman. So offensive lineman and Bruce Matthews. So you guys are known to have all the consecutive streaks. So I was just doing it as poking at you guys as something to do. But I didn't know.
I was just trying to suit up for the next week.